Well, hello there. And welcome back, everybody, to You Are Free TV. We're here today with an excellent, amazing guest, John Darash. He is one of the founders of National Liberty Alliance. And today we're going to be talking about common law and the restoration of the Republic by using, reconstituting common law, the way our law was meant to be by the founders of this great nation. And John, I want to welcome you to the show. We're going to get into a bunch of stuff today, but first, why don't you give folks just a little bit of background of who you are with what National Liberty Alliance is all about?
Okay, well, thanks for having us here today. National Liberty Alliance was founded primarily for the sole purpose of teaching people how to have consent of government. We read about that in our Declaration of Independence. A lot of people don't realize that the Declaration of Independence, being one of our founding documents, is as much as law here in the United States as the Constitution itself, and of course, the Bill of Rights, which is part of the Constitution. But anyway, we first came together, I think it was back in about 2012. We started off trying to get control of the political process by looking into the committee man process. And as time went on, we ended up in court because we couldn't get any power or authority, being the only elected committee man in New York State. And that's kind of a long story, but there's probably no elected committee men anywhere in the United States. At least we haven't found any yet. So maybe there's some states that do still have them. But really, they've been
I would
taken.
love if you would explain that a little more to folks, what that means, because I think a lot of people's civics education is so stunted to even explain that if you felt like it just in a
Well, yeah,
short
and it is part of what
synopsis.
we're doing also. We're not just doing the grand jury, we're also doing the political process without the politics, of course. Politics was never meant to be part of our process. It really is alien to a republic, and George Washington, his farewell speech, probably spent at least three quarters of his farewell speech concerning the problems with the committeeman process and the political process and the politics. Jefferson tried to stop the politics and all of the bickering back and forth because our system is really not set up for that. We're a nation of law, ruled by law. And the Constitution lays out exactly what the authorities of our, servant government is, the three branches. And there is really no room for people to try to really, have a debate or conversation concerning the politics side of it, as far as taking a position and then trying to change laws or whatever it is that they're trying to do to get an advance above the other side, whoever they may be. But anyway, the committee man process was originally started. It was started with what's called the Committee of Safety. And the Committee of Safety is what brought this great nation together. The Committee of Safety came together, our founding fathers came together in what was called the Committee of Safety in order to establish some form of government and really find out what it is they were going to do with the problem they were having with the king. Of course, they were being abused by the king, and they wasn't seen as the people by the king. Eventually, they ended up, the Committee of Safety ended up coming together and putting together ultimately the Declaration of Independence, and then became the governing factor of our nation as 12 colonies until the Constitution was created. And of course, we won the Revolutionary War. We framed out the Constitution, and we became a nation in 1789. The Bill of Rights came in 91, I believe it was, 1791. It's 2 years later. And matter of fact, many of the states or the colonies in those days, which were going to become states, refused signature to the Constitution and agreement without knowing that they were going to also add a Bill of Rights, and so they did. But in any event, that's how we came together. Then the Committee of Safety, they, became the committee men that we understand and know today. They're the people who decide who's going to be on the ticket. They're the people who will walk the papers. In order for an individual to run for office, they have to get so many signatures within the district of whatever it is they're running for, whether it's something local on a town level or a village level or a city level, or if it's something on the state level or the county level or the federal level, they have to get X amount of signatures proportional to their district that they're running in. So you can imagine someone running for Congress needs quite a few signatures, someone running for Senate and so on, and needs quite a few signatures to get onto the ballot. And that's done by the committeemen. And it's the job of the committeemen to really make sure that we have statesmen, make sure that we have people that understand the Constitution, that should be their quizzing of them, and that they're qualified for office. Of course, that whole system has been hijacked by party bosses, and we no longer have any elected. They're elected positions, by the way, and they're elected by the local people within their election district. But that whole thing was hijacked by, you know, the powers that be, so to speak, and it became, you know, taken over nationally. And we have not been able to find, in New York, we haven't been able to find any elected committeemen at all. In any of the parties. We also started looking in many other states, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, New Jersey, and some other states, and even some states out west. We haven't been able to find any elected committeemen. The whole process has been subverted. But anyway, their job was and should be to really choose the right kind of a person. They also have the power to recall. So that if there's an individual mm-hmm. they send into office and then they don't fulfill or they start breaking the law, they can recall yeah. them just by going out and getting signatures, and then they throw up a ballot, and that's it. They take them out. So that's
incredible.
A process. And we,
can
that's
I interject
one of the ways,
here?
Well, just let me just point this one thing. That's one of the ways
please
that
do.
We...
Please do, please.
That's one of the ways that we consent to government. We get to choose our representatives. We do use a democratic process to choose our representatives, but, of course, we are governed by, as a republic, by law. But, yeah.
Wow. And so how did they get rid of the committeemen? How is it that we are functioning as an entire – we know that – I mean, there's a large answer to that, but on the
right. –
on the historical level, how did they get rid of these committeemen? How is it that people are just, you know, running for office without any of this interview process happening?
Well, look
by
at,
these
you know,
supposed elected officials.
When countries have slaves or groups of people have slaves, the most important thing is to keep them ignorant. They don't want them to read and write and so on and so forth. Well, we're political slaves, so to speak. Matter of fact, we have become chattel to these people, and we have been listed as such. Back so many years ago, you know, the process really was we should be learning this thing
keep
through
getting
education.
A yep. poor connection sign, and now I can't hear you at all. Maybe I hear you now. Are you there?
Try it now.
Okay.
Am I coming through? Okay.
Yep. We'll just keep
it
going.
It looks good on
okay.
my side. So, but anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. Keep going.
It's an educational thing. If they remove it from our education little by little, eventually we forget that it exists. And now the only way that people think that they have any kind of consent towards government, the government will tell them, well, you got the ballot box, and that's it. They don't think they have anything else. And nothing could be further from the truth. Our founding fathers has set up quite a few things for us in order to have consent. Total control. We hold the reins. As a matter of fact, George Washington called the committeemen the reins of power. And between the committeemen, the grand jury, and the trial jury, we control the court and the political process. And as long as we can control the court and make sure that the court enforces justice, law, and make sure that the people in office are being obedient to the Constitution or removed when they break that oath that they've given, as long as we can do that, then we indeed do have consent of our government, and we decide what we want and what we don't want. And it's all about principles, you know, about morality and principles, because that's all the people want. They want the government really to be obedient to the law, to the principles, to the morality, the general morality of the people. And everything else is, as far as what government can do, has already been written up in a very small document called the Declaration of Independence. I mean, let's take Congress, for instance. Congress only has 18 powers, and nowhere in there will you find that Congress has any power or authority to write any laws that control we, the people's, behavior. We didn't give them that power. And in the beginning of the Constitution, we read, and let me just read this, we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. So we the people ordained and established, we are above the Constitution, and this is the law to our government that they must obey. And if you become educated in these things, you'll discover they don't obey anything. They have totally, totally out of control. And so the prime directive...
Nothing whatsoever.
Nothing, yes. The prime directive to our servant government is six things. And if they're not doing one of these six things whenever they do any of their work as far as quote-unquote governing is concerned, then they shouldn't be doing it. And those six things, I'll just repeat them, is one, form a more perfect union. Two, establish justice. Three, ensure domestic tranquility. Four, provide for the common defense. Five, promote the general welfare. And six, secure the blessings of liberty. And that's a very important point that our founding fathers put in there, for the government to secure the blessings of liberty, because liberty is blessing, and it comes from the Creator. And people need to understand that, that we have unalienable rights. We do not have civil rights. Civil rights are statutory rights that man gives us. We don't have that. We have unalienable rights. We don't have, any other kind of a right given to us by any government or any man. And as long as they're unalienable, then man can't touch them. And that's the point of what our founding fathers got across when they put together the Constitution and also laid out the Bill of Rights. And the foundation of our government is the Declaration of Independence, which actually, if you read through it very carefully, it's a covenant between we the people of America here with God. A relationship with him to bring the common law, which is the law of the land, it's his law, it's also called natural law, bring natural law into our courts where God rules through what's called the King's Bench. And the King's Bench is 12 witnesses, which would be 12 people, and of course the process of the grand jury, which is 25 people. And so the government can't go after an individual for any kind of a charge or anything without first bringing it to the people, and the people have to agree to give them that, that indictment or not. Same thing with a sheriff or a police officer. They can't just arrest people and think that they can go forward with any kind of trial without first getting the permission, the consent of the people. And then they have to have the consent of the people as to innocent or guilt. Then they have to have the consent of the people as far as decision making is made, is how are they going to restore the injured party. And one of the principles of common law is that for every injury there must be a remedy. In order for there to be a crime, this is the second one, in order for there to be a crime there must be an injured party. So the job of the trial jury is not only to determine innocent or guilt, but it's also to determine how are we going to make a restitution, how are we going to restore this individual who was harmed by another individual. And it not necessarily means to go to jail. We have biblical principles. You steal a man's ox, you got to give him four back. So there are certain principles that are set up, and that's where we got to get to.
And then it was hijacked, right? I was reading a lot of your materials, and in the 1920s, there was this movement to really get rid of citizens' grand juries, right, and replace them with these bar officer controlled. And that's where it became the push towards imprisonment and unlawful fines, all of this crazy stuff that was to push out common law and say, oh, regular people can't administer justice. They're, everyone's dumb. But the Constitution says, or in the writings around this, such as Jefferson, he says, well, no, you educate the people in order to do that job. You don't take the power away from the people. And that's absolutely fraudulent and anti-constitutional. Okay.
Well,
and so
true.
Then we, okay. And we get to today where everything is completely unconstitutional. Our courts are total kangaroo courts. They're not run at all the way they should be. And common law is, laughed at and derided when that's, usually the tactic they do to try to make something look uncredible when really it is completely credible and actually is the real law of this land. And so I wanted to kind of bring it up to the issue of the indictment, the common law indictment that was filed in Northern New York. And I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that, because it has been hugely wondered about across the web here and across, you know, the country, what's going on. People are finding out different things when you look online and you find, you know, there was a dismissal that looks really bogus from last June, but it was refiled under the same number. Is that correct?
Yeah, let me explain some of that. But first, let me just give a little bit more of a foundation, and then we'll go into that.
Please.
You know, first of all, you know, if you go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, you will discover that right on the front page, one of the very first things we talk about is that only the people can save America. People need to understand that. The people have got to get up to save America. And Jefferson said, you know, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So we have to become educated. You know, we have been dumbed down. And as we've been dumbed down, little by little, covertly, the enemy has been working since the very beginning of our nation. In 1789, in the Judiciary Act, the 1789, which is the first year birth of America. That's when the Constitution was signed and we became America. And one of the first acts of Congress was the Judiciary Act of 1789. Now, it was a very good, document that they put together. And well, one of the problems they came out with is they started chancery courts. Chancery courts was barred under the Constitution. If you read the Constitution, we're under equity and law, and our equity is American jurisprudence. It has nothing to do with court decisions. It has nothing to do, except with the exception of understanding certain things, with the United States Supreme Court, which is there's only one of them. They've made a lot of principal decisions, and we use those principles to build the American jurisprudence, and that's where judges are bound to act upon that American jurisprudence, and they clearly are not acting upon it. And maybe one day we'll get into the details of that, how that is and how that came about. But the key thing here is that, you know, they have been working to destroy our nation from the very beginning. You know, they came up with the first Bank of America or the United States in 1791. And that whole process, we know, really, you know, Jackson later on killed the bank, and then it raised its ugly head back again in 1913 with the Federal Reserve Act. Okay, and and so they came back, but the fight and what they've been doing to destroy this nation has been going on for a very long time. And what you'll find, of course, the people who disagree with us, the people who don't understand, the people who say things that are not true and believe in statutes, they're all bar attorneys or people that are paralegals taught by the bar, because the whole process of the bar is to build a statutory process to control the people. It has nothing to do with the Constitution. As a matter of fact, I was taught by a bar attorney as far as the process goes, and he told me that, you know, never bring up the Constitution in the court. There's plenty of statutes you could bring up. That's what we need to be bringing up. And and so, you know, there are a lot of problems. So anyway, it's been a war to get this. So we came to the point where we realized we first spent quite a bit of time trying to educate our sheriffs. One of the problems we found there is when sheriffs got papers, they wasn't sure what they were, what to do with them. They'd speak with their, you know, an attorney, the county attorney or something, and they would say, don't worry about it. Those people are crazy or whatever. So, of course, the sheriffs have been a problem. Some of them have responded. Some of them realize what we're talking about, but a lot of them don't. Then we started to notify the government at every level. We did it on the federal level, the judges, all of our elected officials on a national level, all of the state judges, and the governors across the nation. And we notified them of the subversion against we the people and against our Constitution by enemies, both foreign and domestic. And we laid out all that process. We also found out by filing it with all these courts that it never took any filing. We never got a good response from it, and things, of course, continued. So then we figured, well, the next thing we'll do is let's open a case, okay, and let's file all these papers in a place. Now, it is a civil case, and remember, in this nation, civil law, and the United States Supreme Court has ruled on this many times, civil cases are not constitutional cases. Criminal cases are not constitutional cases. Both of them are outside the realm of the law of the land as agreed about in the Constitution. And so they don't operate under American jurisprudence. They don't operate under the law of the land. They don't operate under common law. And when we filed this paper, One of the first things they did is they gave us a civil cover sheet, and we did this in both cases. We did a New York case also on the gun issue here. But anyway, they give us a paper. Once you fill out all the papers, we tell them this is a court of record, and we laid out this proceeded according to the common law, under the law of the land, and so on and so forth. We make it very clear in our paperwork. We teach people and teach the court specifically through footnotes. Footnotes will explain what's going on in the paragraph, so it's very important to look at footnotes, or it'll give the authorities where we get our authority from. But in any event, once you file the papers, well, they give you a cover sheet, and you don't have a choice. We typed in there, in our cover sheet, we typed in common law, and I forget what else we put into a court of record. They didn't see that, and it went through, so we got it in there. But still, the cover sheet says, that it's a civil process. Also, the other paperwork that they give us for the summons, it says it's a civil procedure. Civil means statutory. So we're right now in the courts right. fighting the point that, which we'll have papers hopefully by the end of the week, making the point very clear that we're not here under a statutory process, but under the law of the land, which brings us into the Constitution and the right of the people under the common law. So that's one
and
of the arguments.
And this is when you're speaking about this, what you're working on now, when you're referring to this actual indictment process.
Right.
Regarding the people involved in the... Yeah.
Two cases.
Can we explain that a little bit?
Yeah, the first case we filed. Okay, we've actually filed some other cases before this, but not on the level we're doing now. one of the things we understood, and if you read United States versus Williams, where Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, I believe that was in 1991, if I remember, but he was writing for the majority, he made quite a few things clear, and that's where we built the grand jury under what we learned and heard from him. And the entire writing that he had was very powerful, and it empowered the people greatly. One of the things he did say is that the grand jury is, first of all, at arm's length. In other words, they're not to be controlled by the judge or the prosecutor or anyone. Same thing with the trial jury. They need to be at arm's length. The second thing he said is that they must operate under the auspices of the court, okay? So under the veil of the court, so to speak. So we tried to file our papers in different courts and tried to get access into the court as a grand jury, to talk as the grand jury, and we started doing that locally. And we couldn't get any of the courthouses to allow us to come in and operate as a jury. So
John, could I jump in real quick here? One thing,
sure.
And could I just read that paragraph in that
sure.
great document that I'm reading? This is in the case of U.S. versus Williams, Antonin Scalia. He wrote, whoever wrote this document put into such good speech here. Writing for the majority confirmed, like writing for SCOTUS. Confirmed that even the United States Supreme Court could not second-guess the jury, writing,
Amen.
Quote, the judgment of a court of record whose jurisdiction is final is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other courts. It put an end to inquiry concerning the fact by deciding it. And I think that is just such a powerful
Yeah, that just
statement.
Lays it right out that we even overshadow the United States Supreme Court. What people need to understand is the United States Supreme Court rulings are under the equity courts, has no control or power or authority under the courts of law. Okay, which means where a jury comes in. Once a jury comes into play, and you can bring a jury into play in an equity court, and I'll maybe explain the difference between the two courts shortly. But
when
great. You come into an equity court and you say, well, I want a jury because it's worth, I have a situation valued over $20, then you got the right of a jury. Now it becomes a common law court. The magistrate sits in the court only, and there is no judge here, and all judges are magistrates, so they turn to they put on their magistrate caps now, and all they could do is operate as sort of a traffic cop, keep things flowing, keep things in order, maintain certain rules, and just keep the process going. But it's up to the people to make the decision. The tribunal in a court of law or a court of justice or a common law court or a grand jury or a trial jury court, they're all the same thing. You know, the whole process is the decision of the people. Okay, they get to hear the entire case. They get to decide both law and they get to decide the facts. If they discover that a law that they're trying to bring some kind of law in and they don't want it, they can nullify it, just ignore it, throw it away, and just make it irrelevant. And that's the power of the people. The people need to understand that. Now, one of the things a lot of judges do is when they have what's called sort of a jury that is tied up, they can't move forward. It's trying to think of the name of what they call that. Slipped my mind. But in any event, when a jury is stuck and they're unable to come to a decision, the only thing the judge really can do is send them back and say, well, you guys are going to hang out there until you come to a decision. Because it's a wrongdoing for a group of people to be brought together as a jury and not come up with a decision. And the decision may be between them is saying, look, we're never going to see things together in this case. You know, you guys saying this and we're saying that. Well, you know what? We just got to find them innocent and let them walk. And that's it. That's got to be the decision. Or they need to stay there till they can all agree, innocent or guilt. Then they have to decide. If they discover a person is guilty, they have to decide what the punishment. I mentioned that a little earlier. And the punishment really is restitution. That's the punishment, not necessarily jail. You know, our founding fathers didn't believe in jails per se. I mean, something violent or something of that nature. You know, the death penalty was in view to begin with. But they would deal with jail in different ways, but definitely not for a lot of the cases that people, you know, go to jail for these days. They need to pay back restitution. So anyway.
Well, and now we also, could I say one thing here? They also thought, you know, we have the largest prison population in the world, plus most of these people go to prison without any jury whatsoever. And that is the bullying, the push is to get rid of juries, period. Yeah, I mean, there's basically so many cases that never, ever go to trial. And that's the push for that in this environment.
And that's a violation of the Constitution where it says no bill of attainder. Okay, and a bill of attainder identifies with a court decision where an individual is found guilty of a crime and given a punishment without a jury. And that's not permitted in the United States. And, you know, there was a Justice Bork. I don't know how many people know or are aware of him. He was back in the 80s, and it was Reagan, I believe, that brought him up to become a Supreme Court, a potential Supreme Court justice. And but anyway, Justice Bork, one of the things he said was that 80% of the people that are in prison are there only because they opened their mouth. In other words, they went into these courts that what's called nisi prius courts. They're administrative courts, all town courts, village courts, city courts. They're all nisi prius courts. That's a no-brainer in the process. They have no power to fine or incarcerate, yet they do. And so they operate under the fiction of law. And that is because something that's not true, and they're operating, and the people believe, and at some point even they believe, that they think is law and it's not law. And then, of course, it becomes part of who we are and what we are as far as our judicial process is concerned. But going back into
Well, and John, isn't that the whole law? I mean, isn't that fiction of law now is the way things run, from what I can tell?
We run
something known to be false is assumed to be true.
Right.
And so, therefore, it operates as if true. And that's absolutely criminal. I mean, that's
correct.
Crazy.
Our courts operate under fiction, no doubt about it. And that's where, you see, this is where we need critical mass. If people really want to do something, you know, people should do whatever it is that they think they should be doing. But everyone should be coming together to deal with this problem that we have in the courts. Everybody needs to be coming together in order to educate themselves. You know, National Liberty Alliance, we give a free constitutional course. It's only about 6 or 8 hours long. You could take it on a weekend easily, and it gives you the basics. It doesn't get very deep, but it gives you the basics. We also have a civics course. And our civics course, that's a long course. It's about 120 hours long. And when you get to the end of that, you'll discover and understand exactly how America got to the dilemma that we've gotten to ourselves right now, where we're at. So we lay all that out in those courses. We're now putting another course together and writing a book concerning this same course which really is focusing in on consent, we the people. You know, I think I'm going to name the book Liberty Lost, and the process, the whole purpose of the book is to refind liberty and to recapture it again and take control of our nation, our government. And that's exactly what this course is doing. Now, you know, we have people signing up for it right now, and I'm hoping to get it open shortly and at least get a few chapters going and then continue and push it through. I don't know how long that course is going to be, but I can tell you by the time you get through that course, people will understand every way that they will be able to consent to government, and they'll understand how we got to where we are and what we should be, what our founding fathers were, what their intentions were, and the kind of nation that they actually created, and the fact that we are a republic and not a democracy. We are a people of law, and we are governed by law. Our representatives are governed by law. That's called the Constitution. They're not allowed to go outside of that criteria, and yet they do every day. They're there to represent we the people, and yet they get all the special interest monies when they go to Washington. They got all these lobbyists coming in, and they take money for their votes. That's illegal. That's a crime. They should go to jail for that. When they come back to the state, we should arrest them. And we need to train our sheriffs and to understand that they are constitutional officers. They're not statutory officers. They're not code enforcement officers. They are here to protect and serve the Constitution and we the people, to protect the people. And so
Well, and that's why they're trying to take the power away from the sheriffs. Mm-hmm. Sorry, sir. That's why they're trying to take the power away from the sheriffs, right? That's part of your newest lawsuit coming out of National Liberty Alliance, from what I can tell.
Well, there's a lot of things. Yeah, there's a lot of things we want to do, and it's all a matter of money. If people come and they want to really see things go and start, you know, giving us $5 a month or more, and we start to get to a point where we could take on a lot of new cases, I think we need to sue the judiciary, and that'll be a very interesting case, and I think I understand how we can put that together. We also need to sue the Bar Association. The purpose of the Bar Association, and even Congress has determined this back in the 40s, they're a communist movement here for the purpose of destroying our Constitution and our way of life. And now, these lawyers don't understand that. And, you know, when our papers go out and the regular people actually sit down and read this, they read through it carefully and, you know, and hopefully they look at the footnotes because that gives a lot of understanding of the meanings of these words. But when they mm-hmm. read through it, they understand it. They get it. And they kind of feel that they almost remember that because that's the way America is supposed to be because it's liberty. It's liberty is obvious once you see it. But the people who are against this and trip over this and cannot understand this are lawyers, bar-taught lawyers. And all of our lawyers are pretty much they're bar-taught, or they have to at least take the bar exam, and then they, you know, then they get their what they call a license, but it's really only a card. It's really a sort of a union card. It's not really a license to practice law. There is no license to practice law. But anyway,
well, it's interesting when I first posted about the common law indictment. On you know, UR Free TV, it was specifically two bar lawyers that that trivialized it.
Right, I heard you
and,
say that.
And, you know, made it, so that doesn't surprise me one bit. And, you know, no offense to either of them, I really enjoy the work they do online as well, but it would have taken just another 20 minutes or half hour of their time to actually read through the 28 pages of the common law indictment and understand that this is absolutely common constitutional law.
One of the problems that they have is their conscience has been seared, okay? And, you know, they've been taken in a young age. They've spent maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars for their education, or their parents did. They went to school for quite a long time. Then when they came out, because, you know, they don't teach them how the process of the court works in school. And my brother went to law school, and he never became a practicing lawyer. But he said the same thing. Two things. They didn't teach me about the Constitution. They talked a little bit about it, but they never looked at it. We never learned about it. The other thing that he said they didn't learn is how the processes of the court courts work. Okay, so when you get out of school, that you're forced really to work with another lawyer or a group of lawyers who then become a mentor and show you how things work and what the process is and teach you how to be a good criminal and not get caught, because that's what it's all about. They're really making money, you know, hand over fist here, and people are being destroyed. But in any event, you know, this whole thing with these the lawyers, when they went to school, they spent all this money, they think they got it, and when someone like me that never went to any kind of a school to learn anything about the law, everything is on my own, and we teach people, learn for yourself, because you go to school, you get ruined, they're going to teach you statutes. So they actually, a lot of them are true believers. They do believe that statutes are law. They do believe that this is the way it should be, and this is the way it was. And they find it very hard because now they're looking at things that they never were taught before. And again, they got a lot invested in these statutes and their times. I really don't think that they read it. They start reading it, and I think they start choking on it. And it's almost like they build a wall. I can't look at that. It's like, you know, the devil seeing the cross or something. You know, I got to get away from this. And that's my opinion on that.
Well,
but they do not understand.
Well, from what I can gather, it looks like statutes are, as you said, this is the communist process of the takeover of our liberties in these statutes and the control of our lives and behaviors through these statutes that are absolutely in opposition to the Constitution. So it's very interesting how hoodwinked people have been in all of these major professions, actually. But all right, let's get to the actual indictment.
Yeah, well, let me just make one other point about that, though. Let me make just one other point about that.
Sure.
Law is not difficult, okay? It really is not. Mm-hmm. You know, these lawyers, they make it difficult because they have all these statutes. They got to remember this and remember that. They got law on this and law on that and law on the other thing. And so they have all these statutes. Now, some of this process is good, you know, that we do need statutory processes for certain things. But we don't need it for equity courts. We only need rules, rules of a court, the rules that are not repugnant to the Constitution. So we have an equity court. An equity court is for, you know, really when you have a contractual disagreement with somebody. Or you're suing somebody for an injury or something of that nature, okay? And it all gets into logic. It's all about the facts. I think it was Lincoln who said, give me the facts. It's all I need is the facts, and I'll win any case. I'm not sure, but I think it was Lincoln that said that. Now, when you get into what they call the criminal court, and really under common law, there's only one court, okay? There's the common law court, which will deal with both equity and law, and then everything falls under law in that case, which really is natural law. And natural law, God tells us that he wrote it in the hearts of all men. We know what is right and wrong. It's innate in us. Unless our consciences have been seared, we know what's right and wrong. We know that murder is wrong. We know that stealing is wrong. And so it's very simple. And as a matter of fact, even a serial killer knows that the murder is wrong. You know, law is not a, this is not a, you don't need to have any kind of a great education to understand, you know, whether someone broke the law or not. Look for the injured party, and then you could decide whether it is a crime or an accident, and if the person needs to be restored by this person. If it's an accident, they still have to be restored by the person who caused the accident, maybe. And that's not necessarily a crime. But then there is, of course, the crime side of things. But it's the law of the heart. That it's that simple. And there's a book out there, and one of the guys that's working with us, his name is Brent Winters, and he wrote a book called The Excellence of the Common Law. Now, it's a little bit of a difficult book maybe to read, okay? I think more if you get familiar with a lot of the things that we're talking about, then you read the book, it becomes much more comprehensive. But he wrote a book on the excellence of the common law. And he made it clear how this whole process came together and how the people are the final deciders and how it always should be that way. First of all, the people are out there. We're working together. We know each other to some degree. And we're more qualified to make a decision on a peer than any, you know, educated individual with some kind of a license or something. So that's the process of law. It's very, very simple. We have principles, and that's the key thing. But go ahead.
Could you just repeat his name again, who wrote that book, his or her name? I couldn't make out the name.
Yeah, his name is Brent Winters.
On the excellence of the common.
Brent
Winters.
W-I-N-T-E-R-S. And it's The Excellence of the Common Law. You can Google that. His website is commonlawyer.com. He's a common law lawyer. We met up with him a while back. I met up with him through his book, actually. That's how I got to know him. And he's been working with us. He comes to our, we have a Monday night call every Monday from
Tell
9
folks
p.m.
about
till
that.
midnight. And
And
he comes
anyone can
on.
join that, or how does that
Oh,
work?
yeah.
Do
You
you
go
join the
up.
National Liberty Alliance first and then come on the call, or can you
Very,
just
yeah,
jump
very.
in and
Very little on our website requires you to become a member. I think the only thing that requires you to become a member, there are a few pages that are maybe we you might not see, but I don't think there's many. Our courses, you can't take our courses without becoming a member. But other than that, if you come to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, top left-hand side, click on Weekly Call, and it'll give you the instructions to come into the conference call. And we have Brent Winters with us every week. He comes on, talks for 20 minutes, maybe a little more, and teaches us something. Right now he's going through the Declaration of Independence. After that, of course, we go to what's called an open forum where people come in and ask questions, make comments. And we do this for 3 hours every week. You know, and we've been doing this
and
since
this is
we
Monday
started.
nights.
Every Monday night. And we have not missed a Monday
And what
night
times?
Since, except for, I think, Christmas fell on Monday night one time, so we missed that, you know.
All right.
But other than that, we have
Excellent.
Not missed a Monday night. And
and
we
just tell
usually
folks what time
update
they could
people.
do that.
9 p.m. Eastern
Does it,
Standard
different
Time.
times?
Eastern.
9 p.m. Eastern. Okay, great.
Till midnight. And
All right,
we
folks.
set
And
it at
then
9.
Shall I put the links to that call in the description for
Sure.
this
Sure.
interview? Is that fine to do as well?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay,
They can
great.
Come to our call, and they can
Well,
ask
look.
any question they want, and we update people also what's going on. But go ahead.
Okay, sorry. So we're about probably two-thirds in. I like to try to keep things to about an hour because people, unlike your three-hour calls, that sound wonderful,
Well, if you
folks,
want to have me on
sometimes
in the
can
future,
only handle an hour.
We could do a
Well, we'll
series
do
of
part
these
two,
things if
part
you want.
three,
So,
and you could,
whatever
you
you
know,
want.
updates, whatever you want to do. I'm at your service.
Appreciate
Absolutely.
that.
And so, but I would love to get folks some information about the common law indictment
Right.
Regarding the Hammonds and Bundys, that case.
Right.
And then get in you telling us about the other lawsuit. I know you're into doing a few, but there is some important stuff coming up regarding the New York SAFE Act
Right.
lawsuit as well. So maybe if you could just give us 10 minutes on each of those, maybe a little more on the first one, because folks really want to hear
Okay, let's
what,
go look
what
at,
happened.
yeah,
You
let's
know?
look at the, let's get back into how, first how we structured and then what we're doing with this paperwork that we've been filing. We came to the point where we couldn't get into the courts, and we didn't think we would, but we tried, we had to try. And so what we did was we operated, so to speak, in a
Can
tent
you name it,
outside
though,
the court.
before?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Can you name the actual law, the case, so that folks have exactly in their mind this
United
common law
States,
indictment?
well, oh, the name of this case that we have, really, the indictment is not really a case. It's a depository. You see, what we did, and that's what I was trying
Thank
to
you.
explain, okay? Let me explain what we did. We couldn't get into the courts. We read very thoroughly Williams' decision, United States versus Williams. It was Scalia that wrote for the group. And so what we tried to do is figure out how we're going to be under the auspices of the court, because we want to operate correctly. And since we couldn't get into the courts, we figured, well, let's open a court case. Okay, we can only open a civil court case. You can't open a criminal. So let's open a court case. Let's change the wordings a little bit. We did, and we're going to file some more papers to make that a little stronger. And let's file all of our papers into that case. And we filed probably 100 and more or more papers in that case. We filed papers on the U.S. Congress, and we put it in the case. We send a copy to Jeff Sessions. We send a copy to the President of the United States, and we send a copy to Senator Grassley of the Judiciary Committee. And then we filed, we sent papers to U.S. Congress, both houses. We sent papers also to the president. We sent papers to Jeff Sessions. We sent papers to every federal court judge in America. We've sent papers to the United States Supreme Court. And in those papers, you can go read them online. They're under our docket. If you go out to our page, nationallibertyalliance.org, underneath grand jury, you will find, just highlight grand jury, you'll come down, you'll see grand jury docket. And grand jury docket lists all of the papers that we filed, and you can read every one of them. That in itself is a huge education. Just read through those papers, and you're in college, you're in school, you are learning the common law.
I mean, I'm seeing 650 pages listed here
There's
alone
lots
as evidence.
Of papers.
Is that...
We also went
Wow.
after a lot of judges and a lot of different individuals and county executives for non-judicial foreclosures, where they take away people's homes, either for tax or mortgages, without going through the judicial process, no due process, which we're about to do an indictment on all those people. There's probably hundreds of people involved in that one. We've done some habeas corpuses. We've had two habeas corpuses that were successful. The rest of them were not successful. And we're getting ready to go after those people, all those judges involved, for an indictment also. We're also looking and been looking at the 9/11 situation, which we're going to be open up eventually on considering an indictment on that too. Let me see what page we got. You can go to, I think we have, grand jury indictments. I think that's where we have the information, right under grand jury, then click on indictments. So we did the Bundy situation. It was really working around Lavoie Finnegan, the individual that was shot in cold blood by numerous federal agencies. By order of from the White House. Of course, we don't have evidence, but we have evidence leading to the White House. Comey was involved in this. The governor of Oregon was involved in this. A lot of people. We've listed them all out on that paper. And it took a while. This information was up. Our membership, we sent out information to our members, and we mentioned it numerous times over our Monday calls that we're going to be doing this indictment. People need to get out there, read, watch, and learn to see what's happening, and let's get an indictment. I believe this particular indictment was unanimous. I don't think there was not one person who went against it. But
Can you explain what that means to people?
We could have 50 or 60 people show up to consider an indictment, or we can have 200 or 300. And we've had 200 or 300 people. We've had almost 300 people show up one time to consider an indictment. And when they voted for the indictment, it was unanimous. Not one person went against the indictment. They said, they believed an indictment was in order here. So we did indict numerous people. Hillary Clinton was amongst them. The governor of Oregon was amongst them. Comey was amongst them, and many other people, big names. A lot of agencies, different agencies were involved, the BLM, the FBI, and also some private corporate entities that were involved in this thing. The state police were involved. There was a sheriff involved in that county. There was another sheriff that was on his way to stop. He knew what was going on. We didn't know exactly what was going on, but he knew the danger was coming up, and he was trying to protect the Bundys and also Lavoie. And matter of fact, they were on the way to see that sheriff in another county next door when they were stopped on a road and slaughtered. Lavoie Finnegan.
Right.
But anyway, that was an indictment we did. Lots of information you can read on that. We have an upcoming indictment. I believe that information is on the grand jury docket page. I don't think we moved it. We might have moved it, but let's see. Grand jury indictment. It's not on that page. Okay, let me see if it's on this other page. Evidence. Okay. I think we moved it recently. It should be under the grand jury. I'll have to look for it. But anyway, we have information on the 9/11, which we're going to be considering, and we also are piling together all the information on all of these judges. There's going to be lots of judges that we're going to indict, lots of individuals working for the county or even mortgage companies, individuals involved in these non-judicial foreclosures and stealing people's homes. And of course, also the habeas corpuses. So what we've done here is
can I interject one thing here?
Okay.
Is it okay if I interject?
Sure.
So folks have been a little confused because of when you look up the case number for the indictment paperwork regarding the Bundy and Hammond situation. You get the case comes up as being dismissed back in last June, right? And so that was confusing. Everybody's like, well, the one that looks like, it is how the court files things or whatever in their computer fonts and everything. This says, it's very clearly dismissive, when you read the 4-page dismissal notice, basically saying, this is spurious and,
we indicted
way
judge.
Out there.
And we indicted that judge.
Good.
we first of all, we gave him a writ of error. We gave him opportunity to show cause and correct. And then we indicted him. And we filed the indictment in the same case, and they took it. We indicted a clerk there that was playing along with the paperwork with the judges, and we indicted a clerk there. And after that, all of our papers to this very day, we just filed papers, I think, a week ago, and we're going to be filing some more papers, as a matter of fact, probably tomorrow, on some non-judicial foreclosures. But they're still taking our paperwork. It doesn't matter to us what they do, what they say. We're going forward. We're going to continue our case. We're going to continue to file. And thus far, like I said, to this day, they are still taking our papers. They are not sending them back. And they are filing. Whether they're permitting the people to see them on their dockets or not, I don't know. We also, everything we've done from the very beginning, and before we even started to do this, one of our members out in Oregon had contact with some of the people with that was when Trump was running for president, had contact with some of Trump's people because they were out there to see what was going on with the problems with the BLM and also what was going on with the Bundys and the Hammonds and some other people that were being abused. These people are ranchers. They're real Americans, cowboys on horses, and they're people of the land. But the miners were being abused, the loggers were being abused, the ranchers were being abused, their land was being stolen, they were being kicked off their land, they were cutting off water supply to them, doing all kinds of horrible things. So anyway, Trump went out there and to see, not himself, but he sent people out there to get information. One of our members was in a group of people working with what was going on out there and had opportunity to meet with Trump's people. And they gave them copies of the papers that we've been serving. He wasn't president yet, so he didn't receive anything directly from us yet. And then Trump, President Trump, still before he was president, sent word that he would like to continue receiving our paperwork. So from day one, we've sent President Trump everything, and we continue to send him a copy. We also have asked for U.S. attorneys for prosecuting from, to Jeff Sessions. He hasn't responded yet, but we perceive that there's something going on that's silent, and a lot of people just aren't aware of, that he's really working with us, we think. We'll see what happens. And he's also working with the president, and they got thousands of indictments. I think I heard you talking about it, too. Believe me, they're very busy. He just can't say certain things, and that's why he looks guilty. I think, at least that's what I think, anyway. This is what I think. I don't know that for a fact. But in any event...
No, but it's very interesting to get your opinion on that. Because, one question is, people are getting very antsy. Like, okay, we hear the plan, trust it, blah, all that. And it's very, we want to, we're trying. And yet, you all, this is about citizens' grand juries, right? And this is about,
this is about
people organizing across the country.
Not citizens. We're not citizens' grand juries.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
Because citizen, there is a group out there calling themselves, there's a couple of groups out there calling themselves citizens' grand jury. They're doing things very different than we've suggested, and we've had contact with some of those people. We've suggested very strongly that they not pursue certain things, and some of them got themselves in trouble. But they're doing it different than us. We're under the common law. Some of those people are looking to go into The Hague. They're looking for different processes.
Gotcha.
Look,
okay.
It is true that you can't really find an Article III court anywhere in America. But you can declare it and open it and maintain that jurisdiction, and it frightens these people. Now, no lawyer can do what we're doing because they'd be sanctioned, they would lose their license, they'd be barred. I mean, all kinds of things would happen to them. But because we're not lawyers, we're the people, and we're operating as the grand jury, they don't know what to do with us. And we know that there is great fear going down, up and down these people's spine right now. We know that. We see what they do. We see what they say. We see some of the people back off. They know. I remember when we toured New York when we first started this, we went from court to court to try to get access. And as we were moving through the state here in New York, all of a sudden we were discovering from the court before, that the next court we went to, that they had already gotten a phone call. These people are heading through the state trying to get access to the court. And a lot of people were worried. A lot of people were excited. A lot of people wanted to know what was really going on. I'm talking about the people in the courthouse. They know that there's criminality going on. They know that these judges are crooked, that they've sold their souls to the devil. They know that lawyers are – I've only met a couple of lawyers in my life that I think are decent people. and only one of them operates under a bar license, or as far as not a license, but under the bar process, and the other one operates as a common lawyer, which is Brent Winters. But getting back to the what we're doing here and how we're filing these papers, we continue to file them. And the other person we send papers to is Senator Grassley, and he's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. We would love to go in and sue from the perspective of the grand jury, to sue the Judiciary and the Bar Association for subversion and teaching subversion against the United States of America and we the people. And we could prove this case, you know, with no problem. Again, that costs money, so we need more money to do that kind of thing. We ask everyone that joins if they can give us $5 a month or more, you know, that supports what we're doing. And that's how we've been operating, you know. Get a few dollars here and a few dollars there, but it has paid for what we have done so far, and hopefully we'll be able to do more. Now, the New York case is an actual case come together by a group of us in New York, and the grand jury is about to get involved in that case right now as we speak. They're going to be coming in what's called, let me see, how do you pronounce this? Amicus curiae, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, which basically an amicus curiae is where a party, an outside party, becomes involved with the case because they have some you know, skin in the action, so to speak. They're involved in one way or another with the how this case ends. And so we're coming in what's called a brief of amicus curiae. And that's the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, also called the King's Bench in this court of record, in support of the plaintiffs. And then we also call ourselves the Sureties of Peace, and we get that. That comes out of the Magna Carta. And the Magna Carta is a little bit difficult to read, but as people start to become educated in these things, eventually people should go over and read the Magna Carta. It's very powerful, and it lays out the foundation of our unalienable rights and the power and the authority of we the people through the jury system and process.
And that was the first time there was a self-called grand jury brought together. Is that correct?
The first grand jury in record is we see in the Magna Carta, and they self-called themselves. They brought themselves together. And that's what we did. We're operating under that. We're also operating under the Declaration of Independence. Our founding fathers pulled themselves together and made a declaration. They themselves, in a sense, was a grand jury, and they separated themselves from the king and the King of Britain. And of course, formed what we have. You know, the grand jury, the trial jury, common law, goes back to 1600 B.C., goes back to Moses. As a matter of fact, you know, when the seal, the American seal, when they were getting to the process to create that, they asked both Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin to come up with some ideas on the U.S. seal. And both of them came up a little bit differently, but they both came up with the lawmaker Moses. One was showing Moses leading people out of Egypt, okay, and that was supposed to be one of the American seals. Another one, Benjamin Franklin, came up with the idea of being caught between the Red Sea and the Egyptians, and how God protected them with a cloud of fire. So that really kind of tells us where our law comes from. It kind of tells us by what authority. So common law comes from that perspective. It comes from the first five books of the Bible, ultimately. But, you know, it's common law under God, and God wrote it in men's hearts. Now, you don't need to be a Bible believer or anything, because God said he wrote the laws in our hearts. So you have to look into your heart. And so we teach people who are going to be jurors, and anyone is going to become an administrator. We're looking to build an administration in every single county, four people in every county. We've got over 1,000 already. And these people will be responsible for the orientation of the grand jury, make sure they stay pure, prevent them from being a stacked jury, prevent them from being a control jury, teach them the basics, which you could do in a day. Everything a jury needs to know could easily be orientated and given to them in a day. Have them take an oath to act with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. At the end of the day, no matter what they decide, they have to end up with the idea of mercy. They got to say at the end of the case, well, okay, if we found them guilty, can we give these people mercy? And that is kind of the final thing. Now, when people work off their hearts, okay, following their hearts, what's written in their heart, what's right and wrong, they work off the oath that they take, and then they listen to the facts of the case. We the people can figure out whether a wrongdoing was done or not. We the people can figure out who did it, and we can figure out what needs to be done to fix it. We don't need statutes to tell us any of those things. And if you read this book by, Brent Winters, it lays that position out quite clearly. The people are much more qualified to decide right and wrong than any educated PhD individual, especially those who are bar attorneys. So,
well, can I jump in here? And also, bar attorneys aren't allowed on these grand juries, isn't that correct?
Yeah,
on the common law grand juries.
That any no bar attorney, nobody employed by the government can be on any jury ever. And yeah. They violate that, by the way. Matter of fact, they had a federal agent in on the one of the Bundy cases, the one that took place with the Hammonds up in Oregon. There was a federal agent in on that one. And but yeah, those people cannot be there. We do allow all those people to join to become members if they want, but we tell them that they can't come to a grand jury decision making. You know, if we're going to consider an indictment, they can't come to that meeting. If they quit their job or, you know, take on another job, they leave whatever they're doing and they're no longer employed by the government, then they're welcome to come in. If a bar attorney gives up his bar license and wants to operate as a common law lawyer or take up another trade, then whatever he wants to do, but then, of course, he's not a bar attorney anymore. They're welcome to come in and sit on the grand jury seat. Whenever we send emails out letting people know we're getting ready to do something and go study the case, and then we also announce it on our Monday programs. And then when the time comes, we set a date, we send the emails out and reminders, and again announce it on the Monday program, and whoever shows up, shows up. And people don't have to be a member to show up. They can show up. They're one of the people. That's all they have to be, one of the people who is not working for the government or a bar attorney. So, and it's, it's anonymous. Nobody knows who's who, and they shouldn't know
because
it's secret. The grand jury operates in secret. And even the trial jury,
right,
to some degree, the trial jury to some degree operates, privately and without no one knowing anybody's decision making there, of course, nor the names of these people. Of course, they can't hide the faces, but no one's allowed to take a camera in the court and shoot pictures of the jury, you know. So at least they shouldn't be. If they are, they shouldn't be doing that, you know.
Well, now, okay, so I think we're going to have to do a part two when it comes to talking about the other case that's happening in New York regarding the Second Amendment, and I'm hoping we can come back to do a part two on that.
Yeah, and that would be better because we are working on two papers right now, which we hope to file before the end of the week, and we'd love to talk about those two papers. I think they're going to be very powerful.
Excellent. Let me just ask you a couple questions before we end the call, if that's okay.
Sure.
First, people are going to want to know, okay, what is the end situation? So say you have the common law grand juries, they find these people guilty, they want to mete out punishment. How does that happen?
Well, at the end of the day, we're expecting we can't go forward without either a special prosecutor, which we may pursue that process, or a U.S. attorney, which we prefer, and we're really trying to drive that way. We do know we have the ear of the president. We do know whether it's agreed upon or not. We do have the ears of both Jeff Sessions and Senator Grassley. They got everything, and they know what's going on. And there are a lot of indictments going out from the other perspective. So we're looking to really get to that point to win a place where we start to get the prosecutors to come over and start prosecuting these people that we're indicting. And that's one of the most important things. Once that happens, when that happens, you see, it probably is going to take one of two things. It's going to take either critical mass, which again we're coming up on 7,000, and once we get that point where we hit critical mass, which hopefully is soon, then we can take control and really do something a little easier or better in the courts. The other way is recognition through Jeff Sessions or even the president or even Senator Grassley, recognition and the sending of prosecutors over to start prosecuting. That puts the people into the seat of control. We, like I said, we are looking for four administrators, and anybody can come in for this job. They just require to go through a certain education we set up. We're setting up four administrators in every single county across America, and there's about 3,200 counties, in order for these people to orientate the grand jury. I mean, the grand jury is coming in, or the trial juries, and lay out the process and make sure they're protected from being, tainted by statutory processes. And then the people will have control. We also are pursuing, again, the committee man thing. We're still working with that, and we'll be teaching people how to take political control and what the process is, how to become an elected committee man, and start moving through that process. And again, it's all about education. We also have a plan to go out into the schools, and we've got a lot of membership. We've got members in every state, lots and lots of counties. So we're pretty much everywhere. So it should be an easy job, especially when we move to the committee man process, to start to get an educational program going in the communities, in our election districts, getting into the schools, bringing civics and common law and the Constitution to be taught in our elementary schools, in our high schools, and even in our colleges. So that's all part of our plan. And also to Amazing. Get back the senators back to the state. Because when they took the senators, and this was illegal, I think it was the 17th Amendment, that moved the senators to be voted upon by the people, well, they took the power and the authority of the states, because the states no longer have any control over Congress, because they used to control the Senate. Mm. And if the states mm-hmm. disagreed with what was going on in the Congress, okay, with the representatives that we send there, they can just say no, vote against it, or whatever. But that right. was against the law. It was against the Constitution itself. In I think it was Article yes. 5. Yeah, Article 5 says that no state without its consent shall be deprived of equal suffrage in the Senate. Now, suffrage means an equal vote, okay, which means right. they have to approve everything that Congress does, as the House of Representatives do. Well, the states also have representatives. And that was a checkpoint that our founding fathers put in, okay, to keep everything in check. So if the people didn't understand and did the wrong thing, the states could come up and say, nah, we don't agree with it. If the states wanted to push something mm-hmm. then, and they were able to establish a movement towards something, the people can go, no, we don't agree with it. But you see, the key thing is this, though. There are 18 powers, and why people need to become educated. There are 18 powers given to Congress, and they can write laws on 18 different powers. People need to understand what they are. You'll find that in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. And you go through these 18 powers, you will discover that there's so much that these people are doing. They don't have the power, or they don't have the authority. The Department of Education should not be. Clearly the IRS should not be. There's so many different agencies that should not be. Now, some of them are good, but most of them are problematic. And this is the business of the states, not the business of federal government. And we are protected. The biggest protection we the people have is the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is the capstone of the Constitution. Anything that is repugnant to the Bill of Rights is null and void. Marbury versus Madison, one of the great cases back in 1801, I think it was. So the Constitution, the Bill of Rights just gets rid of everything. You can't license a right. You can't license my right to travel. You can't license my right to own a gun or to buy a weapon. You can't license these things. And you can't license me to practice law. You can't prevent me from practicing law. I have an unalienable right of access into the courts. These are my courts. It's not your courts. When I open a court, if I go in as a plaintiff and I open a court, that's my court. I name the jurisdiction and we go forward and then we battle to see who wins.
Are you still there?
Yes. You can't hear me? Huh. You there? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay, great.
Okay.
Yeah,
you can't battle.
So, and then wasn't the court, the case that was dismissed back in last June to do with self-representation and them claiming that...
Yeah, but bear in mind, they may have dismissed it in their minds, but they didn't dismiss it in our minds. We're still filing papers. They're still taking papers, and we're still asking for prosecutors. And the clerks, look at, a judge cannot and will not. There is a process, even in the process that they have, there is a process of the way things work. And it is a crime, and we've reminded them of that crime. If you take a paper out of this court, or if you refuse a paper to go into this court, with the exception of something that's not prima facie, in other words, maybe it's just total nonsense, doesn't make sense, or whatever, that's one thing. But if everything is in order, it's what's called prima facie, okay, and you take that paper and hide it, or you take that paper and destroy it, or remove it from that record, you're going to jail for 3 years because we're going to indict you. We did indict one clerk for that, and we haven't had to indict another clerk since. The judges will not do it either. Now, any judge that influences a clerk to do that, it's 20 years in prison. Now, though, that's under under their laws, and we agree with those laws. You know, they do have the power and the authority to write code and statutes to control themselves, and so that's what that's for. That's lawful. And so if a judge tried to take this out of the record personally, okay, he'd be removing records. That's 20 years in jail for him. Okay, so with that fear of the law, and I think they fear us. Well, there's no doubt they fear us. They do fear us. They don't even know what to say anymore. They can't win a debate or an argument because, look, we got the truth, and the truth always shines through. They got the lie, and it's all about subversion. It's all about control. It's all about making us slaves, chattel, and making money.
Right.
Because all these judges are making lots of money on us.
Exactly. Total pay for play, and not to mention way worse than that. Just completely, you know, running as corporations, making all the money off of us. It's insane. And I'd love to get into that in a future episode with you. Absolutely. And I was wondering before we go, if you could just touch on, I was reporting yesterday about, and I don't know if you have any knowledge of this, but the issue of what Anna von Reitz has been talking about regarding the creation of this company called the Republic of the United States of America to issue governmental services to France to basically take over after the bankruptcy that happened last October. At the time, we were all, you know, there was all the talk about the reset. And behind the scenes, we had the territorial corporation enter bankruptcy after the municipal corporation had already entered bankruptcy back in 2015. And according to Anna von Reitz, when Macron was here 2 weeks ago, there was, or a week ago, there was this offering, this French governmental services corporation assuming the contract of what the United Kingdom had been operating under in, you know, their fake ownership of
America. Here's the problem in our strategy and our position on that. If you're going to play in their sandbox, then you're giving them authority to continue to go with the fraud. We don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
We call it for what it is. When it surfaces in court, and you're going to see this come up in our next paper, as a matter of fact. That's why next interview we'll do the New York, and we'll do also on this other stuff we're doing, but we'll give you more information, especially the new papers coming out on the New York case. But look at, when something comes up and they do something wrong, okay, we just need to lay it out and show that it's a fraud and it's null and void. They don't even know what to do when you talk like that. Okay, and they don't come back after that. They don't even try to respond after that because they can't win the argument. And I think you'll see that in what we're going to do on the follow-up on this case. But we're very familiar with all of the acts. Look, they destroyed us going from point to, you know, the National Banking Act, the Habeas Corpus Suspension Act, the Libor Code. Congress changed the word for to two, you know, in the Constitution. In other words, the Constitution for the United States of America in opposition to the Constitution of the United States of America. You know, one is possessive and the other one, they're possessed by the document. And it's for them. You know, it's not of them, it's for them. And we're above it,
Right.
they're below it. We wrote the Constitution, we wrote the law, we did the control, we're the Republic, we set it forward to go forward. And they continue to come up. They came up with the Organic Act in, what was that, 1871, I think that was in. And that's what really corporatized and created the Washington, D.C. as a state within a city under a municipality process. And it's very interesting the way they did that. Now, they've been working on this from day one. They were working on this when we were having the debates on the Constitution. If you go, you know, to listen to the debates and listen to what Jefferson had to say about these things and what was going on. And they continued on. They created the Department of Agriculture, Department of Transportation. They set up monopolies. They rigged commodities. And this is all early on, 1917. They resurrected the bank. They came up with the New Deal, the Shepherd Tower Act, the Buck Act, the Alien Registration, Social Security, emergency banking. I mean, it goes on and on and on. But you know what? It's a house of cards. It's irrelevant. We're not going to go and play in their sandbox. These people are criminals. They're subverting the Constitution. They're subverting we the people. They are the enemies of the state, enemies of the people. Our government is still intact. Everything we need is right there. It's just that it's being controlled by criminals. And that's why, President Trump is draining the swamp. We're going to get rid of these criminals. And hopefully we'll be working with him, because if he doesn't work with the people, then we're going to have to go up against him too. Because we, the people, need to take control of our nation. This is a nation by and for the people. We have government by our consent, and that's what we're driving this to. Now, anything else, you know, we've heard all kinds of talk. This is what they did. That's what they did. We got to do this. We got to do something else. There's a group out there who wants to rewrite the Constitution. They think they have a problem. This is a beautiful document. I found a very few errors in this document that I might disagree with, but those issues don't even bother us anymore. It was a slavery issue to begin with, you know, the 7/10 of a man or something like that. I forget what it was. But that doesn't affect us anymore. That's why America was cursed, by the way, because we didn't have the guts to step up and tell the colonies that wanted to continue it, well, look it, we're not going to get unalienable rights and have the blessings of God if we're going to enslave people. And Jefferson spoke
right,
about
absolutely.
This, and Jefferson is a very misunderstood person, and I'd love to speak about him one day. Maybe next time I'll talk a little bit about him and who he really was. The real Thomas Jefferson.
Sure.
But look, we have to take control. We have to call the spade the spade. If it's fraud, it's fraud. It's what it is. It's null and void. Let's move on, and we press upon the mark of what's right. And it's all about putting it all on a record, eventually getting some people to respond. We keep hitting them over and over again, Jeff Sessions, Grassley, the president, and keep filing the papers, putting the pressure, doing the indictments, and collecting the people to hit the critical mass. So everybody that wants to really get involved, just jump up and get involved. You can continue to do whatever you're doing, but listen and understand what we're doing. Get an education. It'll make you better for whatever it is that you're doing to help support liberty anyway. Understand what the process is all about. Get in power, because knowledge is power. You can get all that free. We don't charge for anything. Okay, with the third course coming up, and again, I'm writing a book on this, and that's part of the course. Big part of the course is the book. It's going to empower the people, and that's required. In order to get into that course, we require people to be a supporting member. So we want to kind of say it's still free, but we're only giving it to people who are supporting members. And a supporting member is someone who gives $5 a month or more. But we do know that also
Excellent.
That some people are on very limited incomes, and $5 a month they can't afford, because maybe Social Security is so minimum, you know. So those people
right.
who can't afford it, they can call a national leader. We have his phone number up on the directory, and you can call him up and let him know, and we'll click the button so they can get access to the course without having to give that $5 a month, because we want to give everything for free. You know, we don't want to charge, but we do need to keep the lights on, and so we have to pay for
it. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the upcoming government by consent course, which looks amazing. And
so, folks,
you should go over.
It's going to be powerful. Yeah. It's going to include everything you need to know, how to get into court, how to write the papers, what the game is all about, you know, lots of memorandums on how to control the court. We're going to be teaching people the judiciary process. We're going to be teaching people the political process, the committee man thing, and how all that works and how they did the fraud and how to become an elected committee man. Teach people the grand juries,
wow,
the administration. We're going to cover everything that people need to know in order to have true liberty and truly be free will be in this book collectively in one place. How to consent to your government.
Ooh. And so when is this course starting? When you say upcoming,
well,
I
was hoping to kick it off before last month ended, April. We're now into May, but you know, there's so many things going on, I keep getting distracted. I've got a couple of chapters just about almost ready, and the introduction should be ready shortly. And as soon as I get those three things done, which, again, if I can get time to finish writing them, probably take me another week of writing. But if I can get maybe in a week or two that accomplished, we can open the course up, and then I can just try to stay ahead of the course so people can start working the course and start being educated. But look at everything that's going to be in, mostly everything that's going to be in that course, we already have it on our website one place or another. We have a huge amount of information. I mean, we've got everything up there. Lots of books, PDF books that you can read. You know, we have the Federalist Papers. We have that both written in PDF form. We have that in audio. We have the Anti-Federalist Papers also in audio. We have just a lot of stuff, a lot of the great
Absolutely.
Works we have up there. We just have so much
Excellent.
Of an education up there. But we will consolidate it into a book. And the good thing about this is that common law and the American, how America was created and who America really is, it is so fascinating. Anybody who starts to dig into this, they got to become excited about it and become, you know, when you become excited about this stuff and you see how you can become empowered and really get involved, and all of a sudden, you know, after you keep drowning yourself sort of in this thing, you know, just through osmosis, all of a sudden it's just all these things start falling out of your mouth, what's going on, what you need to know. And so memory becomes very easy. It's my strategy and philosophy, and by God's mercy, I learned this kind of early on. You know, I don't try to remember anything. I only try to understand it. And if you put yourself around
well,
any
then.
Subject, you're gonna master it. Okay? Look, children
yeah.
are not sent to
yeah.
school to learn to speak. You know? Exactly. They learn through osmosis. Okay? They're there, and next thing you know, they're talking away. You can't even shut them up anymore, you know? Sort of joke, but anyway.
Well, and there's also the issue that it's just on some level, folks have, like you said, the quote from Jefferson that, you know, I can't remember exactly, but it's the, you know, liberty isn't, you can't have ignorance and liberty coincide. You have
to,
it's our responsibility.
Right. If
yeah.
people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. And let me tell you something, that is the foundation of National Liberty Alliance. The purpose of National Liberty Alliance is not to rule over people. We do take a leadership role as the unified United States common law grand jury to make sure, you know, because we're fighting enemies, you know, that are destroying our nation, both domestic and foreign enemies within our government. But the purpose of National Liberty Alliance is to facilitate an organization, communications, and bringing things in an education and bringing things in a consistent way to work through this whole process, and people need to step up. Now, once we start to build the administrations and start to get elected committeemen around the nation in the counties, then the purpose will mostly be as an advisor and a place for people to send more people to get educated. We will always be an educator. We'll suggest to people, look at it, if you're going to decide for a person as a committeeman to help them to get into office, maybe require them to take our test, because we're going to give them a good test. We're going to give them a requirement. When they're ended up, they're going to understand the Constitution, what the law is, and what their job is. You know, mm-hmm. as a committee man, they should be asked, if they're running for Congress, you know, well, how many powers do you have? Tell me about the Article 1 of the Constitution, because that's about Congress. They should know everything about it. And if they don't,
Absolutely.
Shame on them. You know, if you're going to support someone running to be a judge, because we elect our judge on the state levels, the county levels, the town levels, and so on, you know, ask them questions about, you know, Article 3 and make them, what is the law of the land? You know, ask them those questions. They need to know that. They don't know it. None of them know it. They don't
Right.
even understand. You use words of the Constitution. They don't even know it came from the
Never heard of it.
Constitution. Yeah.
Exactly. That's crazy. Wow, John. Okay, I'm going to wrap it up because we're going to go to a number two here, and we'll
Okay.
schedule that soon.
Yeah,
But I
just
just want to
call
advise
Jan
people,
and settle
go
up
to
with him.
National Liberty Alliance, you know, go check them out, donate if you can. It takes money to run these amazing services that they're putting together that we need so desperately right now at this critical juncture that we're in, at this incredible, vital time in history.
And
We
take
need
our
to
free
support National
courses.
Liberty Alliance.
Take our
Yes,
free
take the
courses. Get
courses,
educated.
donate, become a monthly supporter so that you can get into the new course that's coming up. And check out those Monday night calls, because that is an incredible way to get in the moment information. Like when you talk about learning, that's one of the most amazing ways. I think people engaging with each other like that is one of the most incredible ways to learn.
Absolutely.
And,
And it's
you know, people
also
depend sometimes.
Direct
Go.
access to the founders. You know, there's
Right.
two founders to this. There's Gerard and myself. Matter of fact, next time we come on, if you don't mind, maybe we can bring him in because he can pipe in things in between. And, you know, we work together well.
Sure.
And whenever I'm not around,
Excellent.
he takes control. Like last night's meeting, I very rarely miss a meeting, but occasionally I do. Last night I didn't make the meeting and Gerard ran it. So, and often I pass it over to him halfway through anyway. You know, one of the things we also teach in National Liberty Alliance, especially on our leadership, that we all work with a partner. So when one person can't make it, becomes ill, or even passes away, there's someone there to take control and continue whatever the process is. We have lots of committees going on. We take ideas. If people got a new idea, a nice idea, they bring it to the national leadership. If the leadership approves it, then it comes through us, and then usually it'll go through. Or they could take it directly too. If the national leadership doesn't see that it should be something to go through, they could bring it up on a Monday night program, and we may agree with them, and we'll overshoot the leadership and say, hey, let's get a committee doing this. People need to get involved. You know, need to give an hour a week or whatever you can. I mean, some people are retired; they give a lot of time. You know, there's a few of us that are.
Right.
Well, there's quite a few of us actually that are full time. I'm full time in this thing. I don't do anything else. And so, you know, we need the people to get active. We need to teach people how to become active, how to become leaders, and take control and create a true grassroots control of government, of consent.
Right.
That's the purpose.
Vital, vital. Yes, yes. Grassroots is key.
Mm-hmm.
All right, John, I'm going to say goodbye for now.
Okay.
So thank you so much.
Thanks for
I'm
having
so
us.
Appreciative of this interview, and I'm looking forward to the next time. And folks out there listening to the interview, you know, you are free, but you've got to be very involved in getting your freedom back, because we are living in a time where they are doing everything to take our freedoms from us, which of course is absolutely against natural law, common law, the Constitution. We have the human right to be free, given to us by God. So
Amen.
Thank you so much,
truth
National
will,
Liberty
truth
Alliance.
Will prevail.
Absolutely. And we'll see you next time, folks. You are free.
Thank you.